Hey, this is Ed. So this is a podcast, is that right?
This is.
Okay. We're officially podcasting right now. That's awesome.
This is Straight from the Cutter's Mouth.
Welcome to Straight from the Cutter's Mouth, a retina podcast. At least once a week, we bring you insights and perspectives from the world of vitreoretinal surgery. I am your host, Dr. Jay Schreeder. Today, Dr. David Almeida joins me to discuss his intersecting life as a retina specialist, website blogger, author, and public speaker. Remember that you can find this episode and all prior episodes on our website, retinapodcast.com. That's RETINAPodcast.com. All episodes, including this one, can be found there sorted by category. We have a weekly blog coming. We'll be focusing on topics relevant to both retina specialists and medical students. And I would expect our first blog entry within the week. We also will be putting up selected excerpted transcripts from some of our most popular episodes. Right now, you can sign up for our mailing list to get updates on the most recent episodes. And at the bottom of the websites are links to subscribe in the iTunes Store as well as Google Play. If you listen regularly, please subscribe or sign up for the list. You can also like our Facebook page or find us in the podcast section of the iTunes Store and Google Play. We're on Twitter at Retina Podcast, and to contact us, click on the Contact Us link on our website or email us at retinapodcast@gmail.com. We really love getting feedback, both on things we can do better and things we are already doing well. We appreciate anyone who subscribes via iTunes or Google Play to leave your positive comments in the form of a review, because those positive reviews help us as we continue to grow and expand our scope. We have over 4,000 subscribers through the month of April, and we are humbled to think that you find what we do is valuable, so thank you all.
Hello.
Hey, Dave, it's Jay Schreeder. How are you?
Hey, what's going on, Jay? How are you?
Straight from the Cutter's Mouth is now privileged to be joined by Dr. David Almeida. Dr. Almeida is a member of Vitreoretinal Associates PA in Minneapolis and St. Paul, Minnesota. And he also has his own website, davidalmeidamd.com, and recently the author of a bestseller on Amazon.com, Decision Diagnosis, 7 Antidotes to Decision Procrastination. Dr. Almeida, David, nice to have you on the show. How are you?
Hey, pretty good. Thanks very much for having me, Jay. Appreciate it.
So, you know, it's interesting. We met recently for the first time in person, but I had seen your name. You write a column from time to time in Retina Today. And, the first thing I'm sure you get asked about is you have so many degrees. You're a MD, MBA, PhD. What was that path like? Like, how did you end up in ophthalmology? What was the order of those degrees and kind of your educational path?
Yeah, it's like a long, circuitous journey, I guess. I started off, with my PhD, and actually did an undergrad in toxicology, and I really got into the idea of drug design and drug development. I thought this was really an interesting and novel way to target disease processes that could affect lots of people. So, I went down that path for a long time, but it got to as I neared the completion of my PhD, I started seeing that I treated a lot of the design aspect in a black box. And then whenever we had the pharmaceutical meetings, there would always be, you'd always be missing a lot of the information that the MDs would bring about disease processes and aspects that you just didn't know. So I thought, hey, if I really want to design really good drugs or be better at this, getting an MD and learning more about the pathophysiology of these disease processes would be a good idea. So that's what brought me to medical school, and then ophthalmology was a natural extension of that, because it seemed there was all this opportunity for new drug design. Anti-VEGFs were starting to appear and taking off, so I thought, this is a pretty neat aspect that could correlate well with the design of drugs. And then so that led me down the ophthalmology retina aspect, and then along the way there, I trained in Canada. I did my med school and residency in Canada, and I got really interested into the idea of resource allocation and the economics of healthcare, because we had our neighbors down south in the United States. They did it a certain way, and we did it a certain way in Canada. And the Europeans had a different mix, and I really got into this and thought, it'd be interesting to add to my skill set some business aspects, and that's where the MBA came in. So it's kind of circles around and around.
So let's talk a little bit about what you do now. So how long have you been now out of fellowship?
2 years.
2 years. And you did your fellowship at University of Iowa?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And who were kind of your primary mentors? Like, everyone kind of, it's very difficult when you train at a busy place, but when you're in the OR and you're trying to make decisions, who do you reference? Who do you hear in your head?
Yeah, you know, there's Dr. Vinit Vinu Mahajan was a huge influence because I liked his efficiency, how he approached PVR. You know, I think of Dr. Culver Bolt and all the things I learned from there. Jim Folk, you know, his practicality and into fixing things like retinal, no matter what the retinal attachment brought. So those are the guys that come to mind right away.
So in reference to PVR, we actually talked in the podcast a little bit, recap of some of the sessions from Vit Buckle Society, which was already a month ago almost. It's crazy how fast time goes. But you had a study you discussed and kind of a surgical technique for maybe prevention of PVR. What factors kind of play into PVR? Tell us a little bit about how you approach retinal detachment procedure and what your study showed.
Yeah, and it's something that I've been really interested probably from the last year of fellowship, and I continue to be, because in the case that walks in, as we know, Jay, with the PVR risk factors, the GRT or, you know, uveitis, things like that, you know, those people are, you know, the prognosis is different. They're going to do a certain way. However, it's those people that come in and they have like routine retinal detachment repair that then develop PVR, and they're not commonly, but I found these people really interesting, why they seem to have some sort of aberrant healing process and went on to develop PVR. So we started doing studies into it and looking at different aspects. And our biggest study to date was a kind of an interventional case control study where we had a bunch of normal retinal detachment patients and then a bunch of normal retinal detachment patients that developed PVR. I'm lucky to be part of a big practice, so we had this huge database of patients that we can mine. And what we found is that there was two really risk factors that had odds ratios that increased it quite a bit. One was a modifiable risk factor of smoking. So smokers, either current or former smokers, had a huge increase in PVR formation after uncomplicated repair. And the other one was, you know, if they were macula off. And this one's harder to rationalize, and it's probably acting as a surrogate of extent or timing of how long the retina has been detached for. But those are the two that came out with robust odds ratios.
So do you, and this was asked to you, I guess, during your talk, do you do anything differently in those patients, or have you started approaching the conversation differently?
I do. Now I talk to everyone about smoking. You know, if they have a retinal detachment, I tell them that if they smoke, to stop smoking, or if they can cut down smoking, it'll decrease the risk of PVR even if the surgery goes perfect. And then if extensive detachments, I do a lot of vit buckles. I like that surgery, especially in phakic patients. Didn't try to minimize any of those.
So let's talk about every surgeon kind of has, we all pride ourselves on our ability to handle any situation or instrumentation, but we all kind of have, you know, they always give the question to people, if you had one meal to eat, if, you know, if you were on death row, what would it be? Well, if you had one surgery to do, unless you were doing a vitrectomy, what are your likes as a retinal surgeon? What gauge, what instrumentation, what machine, what are kind of your preferences?
Yeah, I use the Alcon Constellation system. I like 25 gauge or 27 gauge valve system. I find that's nice, close, very predictable, very stable. And now, you know, having trained in Canada, I always feel like you learn to do the most with a little. So, you know, I'm very simple. I don't need I don't use lots of instruments. I feel I can do most with a cutter, even for, you know, TRDs and things like that. Most of the peeling I can do with that. So I have a pretty simple setup. In terms of if I go to extraneous instruments that I use a lot, I really like the Tano. I think the Tano is an awesome instrument that you can use as a pick. You can use it for membrane peeling, dissecting membranes. It's just so flexible. And for things like vitreoschisis that I talked a little bit about, VBS and incomplete PVDs in some of these retinal detachments, something like a Tano is great to remove these immature membranes or vitreous layers that are left behind.
Besides being a surgeon, you've become well known as a social media presence, as a speaker. You do research. You're balancing a lot of different things. Let's talk a little bit about the social media part of it, because we recently had a discussion about social media on the podcast. Why start the website, and how did you get into to consulting and talking about not just about ophthalmology or retina, but about things that can apply to anyone who is trying to set their life in a better path?
It's an interesting question. I really enjoyed your podcast with iSteve. I thought it was so topical and very poignant on these issues. I feel like there's a responsibility to disseminate information in the channels that are best suited for our modern time. And I think social media is a good aspect of this, where you can distill and get other information out to whether they be you know, people interested in healthcare, people interested in ophthalmology, people interested in general medicine, or the professionalism and business side of things, which for me are really personal interests that I really enjoy writing about and reading about. So for those reasons, I thought, you know, having my own website and having a weekly blog and trying to do things around those mediums really fitted perfectly, because I could address them in a very efficient way and still have good content out there for those who are interested in.
You have a section on your website you call the Sunday Surgical Scrub. Tell us how that idea came about and what do you hope to achieve? It's basically a blog you do every Sunday.
Yeah, that's basically, you know, the Sunday Surgical Scrub. I always thought that one of the things I really was interested right when I started getting into surgery, let's say, you know, when you're in medical school and you do some observerships or maybe you scrub in for the first time, I thought the scrub was a really interesting time frame where you, all of a sudden you got to kind of clear your head and all you're really thinking about what that patient had and what procedure you're going to do. And so I think of the blog as that way of thinking about topics. Sometimes there's topics that inundate us and interest us, but we don't really spend much time with them because we're so distracted with so many things. So the scrub is an idea to, just like you clear your mind before a surgery for a scrub, the blog acts like that for a topic or for some issue that may be of relevance to some aspect of your life.
And one of the things you talk about a lot, I went back, you know, I've started reading it because I find it really enjoyable, but I went back and read some of the older ones to kind of do research for our podcast episode. And you talk a lot about, you know, avoiding getting caught in the rut. You talk a lot about balance in life and continuing to push yourself and learn. How do you balance it all, you know, as a busy retina specialist, right? And this ties into one of my earlier questions, but retina is so busy, right? You're doing full-time with your practice, you have your patient responsibilities, your group is starting at fellowship, I've heard, too soon. And then you have this whole other life that you're also doing. You're speaking, you're consulting, you're teaching. I'm sure there has to be conflict around the way where you make decisions one way or another. In the end, how do you prioritize things?
I try to. So I think first and foremost, you know, my patients and my responsibilities at the VRS are number one. So that always gets addressed the first. That's kind of my first priority. Beyond that, I find they complement each other. And then if my ability to, let's say, you know, write for the website or work on it kind of feeds me, it recharges me, gives me energy for the other aspects of life. I have three small children. I love spending time with them and my wife. That's a really huge priority too. So, you know, let's say when they go to sleep at night, you know, I'll work on a blog post. Or, you know, if it's Sunday and I wake up and everyone's still sleeping, I'll work on some aspect of research or something like that. So I try to fit it in where they complement the other aspects and try to minimize how they will conflict with each other or take time or there'll be some rivalry for time between them.
And that leads into the last thing we're talking about. You know, you have this book that now is on Amazon and it's become a bestseller in multiple categories across the world. It's called Decision Diagnosis, 7 Antidotes to Decision Procrastination. It's available both in electronic and paperback forms. And, you know, I guess this is a natural kind of path from your blog and your website. It was to kind of put this all down on paper. How did you go about writing a book? I mean, it's not a easy decision. I guess it's easier now than it was before, but it's a big step to make, big commitment.
Yeah, the idea for the book I've had for, you know, for years, you know, maybe even 2 or 3, maybe even 4 years, and it existed on the backs of napkins, and it's just some idea that I had for a long time, and then I kept putting it off, and eventually I came to the conclusion that if I ever was going to make a push for it, and if I was really interested in it, you know, I had to do it, and so it took me about a year to do here and there, but it was important to me because I felt like the construct was really interesting. Was, you know, me and you and anybody in medicine knows about the sacred seven. You that's what you ask your patients right from the, you know, the first time you do clinical skills in medical school. And that I essentially took those sacred seven and brought them over using some MBA in economics concepts and principles to try to extract the information from the decisions that you're asking. I found this really interesting. I found this really useful. And so I really wanted to put it down and formalize it into a book. And so, you know, after about a year, I was able to finish it.
Any further things planned in terms of writing? I know this was just published, but it's been well received. Have you given thoughts that this is something you're to continue to do?
You know, I like speaking about it, and you know that's growing now. You know, where I go out, and I'm used to speaking about ophthalmology and retina, and that's fun. But I'm doing a little more speaking on the book side of it, and that's really fun because it's a totally different population and it's a different usually media format. We'll see where that goes, but I don't have any other plans for books or anything.
Final thing, you know, you have your company, which is Citrus Therapeutic. I'm sure there's things you can tell us, things that probably you can't tell us, but what can we expect from your company going forward?
Yeah, you know, this was co-founded by me and Dr. Eric Chin, who's a retinal consultant of Los Angeles. We are co-fellows at the University of Iowa, and we just used to talk a lot about drug design, about trying to find a different platform than the usual way. The old way of having a big company buy a small company, and basically the very slow process to getting drugs out seems to me, to both of us, to be archaic. So we have a different platform where, you know, we use what's called multi-pharmacophore drugs. We're drugs with multiple therapeutic actions to try to get more efficacy from one drug. So we have two drugs in the pipeline right now that we're working our way through that will probably have applicability for dry macular degeneration, also probably for PVR, or some sort of anomalous inflammatory scarring. So we're working our way through that. That's lower on the totem pole as we try to find time for it. But that's the goals of Citrus Therapeutics, and we hope to continue to develop that over the next few years.
Last question: you do all these different things related to work, and you say you derive energy from. What else do you like to do with your recreational time?
Yeah, I'm a really competitive squash player. So, you know, I try to travel to as many tournaments as I can. So, a couple of weeks ago, me and my two older boys, we went to the Madison Squash Open. And so I won the Wisconsin tournament. And then this past week was the Minnesota State, and I lost in the semifinals. So, you know, I'm a pretty avid squash player.
Well, David, you're an efficient guy in your life. You're very, very impressive. And there's a lot we can all learn from your example. I have not read the book, but I've heard from people already, my friends have read it, it's very good, so I'm going to be reading it. Again, the name of the book is Decision Diagnosis, 7 Antidotes to Decision Procrastination. It's available on Amazon.com in both Kindle and paperback versions. And David, thanks for your time. You're an efficient person in life. This is an efficient podcast. We covered a lot of things in a short period of time. So I appreciate your time, and thanks again.
Hey, thank you kindly for having me, Jay. Really appreciate it, and always a pleasure to get to catch up and chat with you.
All right, my friend. Take care, and good talking to you.
Hey, thank you very much.
As always, you can find this episode and all prior episodes on our website, retinapodcast.com. That's RETINAPodcast.com. You can also like our Facebook page or find us in the podcast section of the iTunes Store and Google Play. We're on Twitter at RetinaPodcast, and to contact us, click on the Contact Us link on our website or email us at retinapodcast@gmail.com. Thank you, as always, to Louis Kai, our stellar producer. Thank you to listeners for what you do on a daily basis, the patient care you provide, the articles you read and publish, and the conversations you inspire here on the show. And thanks to Dr. David Almeida for his time. This is Jay Sridhar signing off. We'll be back next week. Feeling.
This is straight from the cutter's mouth.